As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. We're coming to you today from Hotel Football. We've got a nice view over the water of Old Trafford. It's sort of sunny in Manchester, which doesn't happen that often in March. We've all got a smile on our face. And Andy Mitten and Carl Anker are here. Andy, it's so sunny, you're going to climb a hill this afternoon, aren't you?
Yeah, I might do. I just saw that there's a hill I've not climbed in Lancashire called Pendle Hill. The water of Old Trafford, that's the Bridgewater Canal, mate. That's the first canal in the world.
Yeah,
carry on.
That's me putting my place, Carl, straight away.
How old is that canal then?
I think, off the top of my head, I think it's late, like 17-something out towards Worsley. And before the River Mersey, it was like, before the Manchester Ship Canal was built.
I was going to say, it's not older than the River Mersey,
no,
surely.
It's not. Before the Manchester Ship Canal was built, this was used to move trade around in Cottonopolis, where we are now.
Yeah, we're going to talk today about the women's team. We've got Charlotte Harper joining us later because she's done a special report this week into the state of Manchester United's women's team. We've also got the Manchester United number one, Andre Onana, to talk about because Kyle and Andy have put a piece together which will be out on Friday. And we also, of course, need to preview the game here across this famous water, as Andy has just mentioned, at Old Trafford this weekend against Everton. Really, this would have been an ideal opportunity for us to talk about the stadium as well and obviously the plans that Ineos have and what we know about that. We're going to do a special podcast in the coming weeks about that. That's not one for today. But in terms of your week, Andy, I've seen you've finally completed the 92. I'm pretty sure you said you'd done this, what, December time? We talked about it on the podcast.
You're right. I did finish it in November. But something's been irritating me. I'd been to Peterborough before, but I'd not seen a competitive game there.
But that doesn't count then, does it?
No. But I'd actually been on the pitch with the manager, Barry Fry, whose son's a prominent Cockney Red, and another lad, John Taylor, well-known Red, 99, come up to Peterborough, have a good night out, took us onto the pitch, saw the first team training, saw Nobby Styles speaking in Peterborough, got taken to a nightclub by the manager. I mean, it was a brilliant night with Cockney prices, if I'm honest. I remember
That's vintage Barry Fry.
Remember spending 120 quid thinking, because I lived in London for a year, I'm thinking, is this how much Cockney spend on a night out? But I'd not seen a game there. And United did play there in 08 in a friendly, but I think I was on a pre-season tour. So for 3 months, I've had this internal irritation. You've got to go to Peterborough. And if you don't go, you're a fraud. And as I'm driving back at midnight the other night, I'm thinking, you're just pushing this way too far. But anyway, I've done it now.
You have, finally. You're not going to like tell us in 3 months' time that there's another technicality that you've not quite made, no. You've definitely done it now.
I like the way you stress competitive match, because now I'm really thinking, which ones do I have to chalk off my list because I was only there for friendlies?
Friendlies are okay.
Okay.
First team friendlies are okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I don't give a shit how many grounds I've been to.
Couldn't remember most of them.
I mean, I've seen United play a lot of places, but I'm not bothered whether I've been to Mansfield Town, to be quite honest with you.
I am.
Yeah, I know.
You know, we're just built differently, aren't we?
We certainly are. That's what makes the podcast great, yeah?
And it makes the world go round. And I respect the fact that you're not bothered that you've been to Field Mill Mansfield, but Field Mill Mansfield irritates me because it's only got three sides. There's little things like that. I'm not saying that I wake up in the morning irritated about that. You know, my wife and kids do take priority in my life. But when I'm by myself on these little adventures, yeah, that's me.
Me time, right? Okay, let's talk about Andrea Onana then. I promised it at the top. You two have been working on a piece which will be on The Athletic on Friday about Manchester United's number one. Because I think actually, Carl, we've maybe been a little bit guilty of not talking enough about how much improvement there's been there. I'm cautious with how much improvement, as we'll get into in a moment. But there's been improvement, right?
Yeah, caution's the word here. So I think it was after halftime at Fulham. I remember going, Onana's having a really good half. Knock on wood, tap, 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 tap. So I had a similar thought against Manchester City. And he keeps having these 45 minutes post-Christmas, I'll say, that have been really impressive. And then the second half where you're like, okay, this is not your fault. Maybe if we can get a more reliable defence in front of you, things will be better. Big editor had a chat with us all on Monday. He said, if Andy can go find something that we don't know about Onana and Carl can go look at the stats, we can combine together and get this piece. This piece will go out on Friday. And yeah, it's a really interesting look at perception versus performance in a goalkeeper, because one thing Andy did, which was really, really good, is he talked to Eric Steele, who is the goalkeeping coach who learned Spanish to help David De Gea integrate and was really, really important to helping David De Gea come through. Now, I've looked at all the spreadsheets and whatnot and all the data, and Onana, as a Premier League goalkeeper, big thumbs up, doing well.
In the stats?
In the stats. Big thumbs up, doing well, needing every conceivable metric. He's one of the better goalkeepers. Not the best. However, as we had conversations with Eric Steele and things we've got into further in the piece, you're going, this is why perhaps it's taking some time for us that we'll go, oh yeah, he's actually quite good.
Why do you think that is? Because the start was so bad. I guess that's the easiest way to state it.
Start was bad. So I spoke to lots of people on and off the record, and Eric Steele was on the record, and he'd been approached by loads of people to talk about, compare Onana with David De Gea, and he's like, nah, I don't want to do this. I don't trust how it's going to be taken. So it's good that he spoke to us. And then I know what Andre Onana's thinking about things. And what can I blame it on? Well, not his family, because they settle completely well. They all speak English. Andre speaks five languages, you know. United wanted him in early. So to try and negotiate with Inter, who had a small matter of a Champions League final where he was brilliant. And then Inter came in straight after that and wanted a huge amount of money. And John Murtry did a lot in the negotiations, batted him down and down and down. United have got very good relations with Inter Milan. They wanted him early because they felt that he would struggle, as any goalkeeper does, to adapt immediately to the Premier League. And we saw that. David De Gea is probably the best example of that. And then he came in. He's playing in front of very unsettled defence, changing all the time. But some of it is on him. And there's been times where he's gone, I don't know what's happening to me here. My confidence is shot. The low point was Galatasaray away after the match. And there's loads of detail in the piece. But trust me, there's been some really tough moments. We've seen him in games, but there's been times in training where there's been major doubts about him. So I'm pleased, and Carl's reflected this, and Carl's done a really good job digging out the stats to back it up, that there's an upward trajectory. I like the way you framed the question, saying, you know, cautiously optimistic. We ain't looking here at Lev Yashin or Dino's off quite yet.
No.
But this is a lad who wants to stay at United, whose confidence is now up. We're talking after the Manchester derby when I thought he had a really good game. There are areas where he can improve, but I think he's been one of the bright spots post-AFCON. There's a load of stuff in there about what's going on with Cameroon, which I didn't know. And if you ask me now whether he'll play for Cameroon again, it's a really complicated answer to that, dependent on elections, etc. But I'm having him. And trust me, in Istanbul, after United had won 1-6, got to get that mentioned in, haven't I? I had doubts like the rest of us. So it takes time in the Premier League. And it cost a lot of money. But I think with a settled defence in front of him, I think he'll come into his own. You know, he was one of the leaders in the dressing room in Inter Milan. He's not yet at Manchester United, but he's a confident lad. He's got the ability to converse in all different languages. He's not a 21-year-old. He's not shy and callow like David De Gea was. I think next season could be a really good one for him.
You mentioned not having a settled defence. It's been an unsettled defence, hasn't it? You know, we've talked about it on the podcast before, but Manchester United have had 24 different back fours now. Manchester Derby was the 24th with Dalot, Varane, Evans and Lindelof starting that game. Obviously, that's not including changes in matches. That is just the starting back four. He's only started behind the recognised first choice back four once, as we've talked about on the pod before as well. That's not going to help, is it? Because the style that he wants to play, not all the players in those 24 back fours can do it.
No, you're completely correct. And it really feels as if the plan Erik ten Hag had during pre-season to make Manchester United the best transition-based team in the world, Mason Mount, Onana, Hoyland, if Hoyland had been fit for the start of the season, I have to really squint, look at the data, yeah. And like, okay,
there's something there, maybe.
There's something there. And if your best performance last season were Lisandro Martinez, Casemiro, Marcus Rashford and Bruno Fernandes, your best performance last season, it would make sense to go, actually, we don't need the ball too much. What we need to do is win it quickly and then hit people really quickly on the counter. Onana's passing, short-range passing is very, very good. He's very good kicking out of hand, as we saw in the derby. That's sort of, I'm just going to lob it. He's also got a really inventive throw. Sometimes he does the big overhand. Sometimes he almost like basketball chucks it.
I've noticed that.
He's got two. So just watch him when he throws it. So that made sense. Now, the problem is, if you're doing those sorts of things and Martinez can do it, Martinez can beat the first wave of pressure, then get it to Casemiro. Casemiro can launch it. If Casemiro can't launch it, Bruno Fernandes can launch it. And then hopefully you've got Rashford running into space. Martinez is injured. Casemiro now is playing like he's 31. And I mean that mildly derogatory.
How old are you?
I was exactly about to ask that question.
How old are you?
I'm 32. I'm 33 next month.
You've noticed a big decline, have you? Is that so why you've grown a moustache?
He's got experience of being 31, certainly, yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, oh. Yeah, the tash is a point. I didn't mention that at the top. Yeah, so that's what you spent your week doing. He's been climbing hills and going to Peterborough. You've been just growing that tash, yeah?
Yeah, I took the beard off, won a tash. This is what happens when you lose the derby. You just have loads of City fans on your face. I'm like, maybe if I shave, I can look someone else. I don't know.
Create a different talking point, maybe.
City fans like running up to me going, "Wee!" So,
you've had that this week?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I had two or three in the gym. Yeah. You're right.
Hi, Carl.
I'm like, yeah, good.
I'll get you back. I'm going to grow a moustache. You don't recognise me next time.
I'm going to hit you over the head with a dumbbell as well.
There's another thing about Onana, right? It's adjusting to playing for a huge club. Ajax are big. Football's huge in Cameroon. Inter are big. But when he made that mistake against Lons pre-season and he went viral, he was like, whoa.
That's a pre-season friendly, right, as well.
Pre-season friendly where they've played two games over a weekend.
Yep.
And he's like, whoa. I'll give you an indication of the difference between Manchester United and Inter Milan. And Inter are huge. When United played Inter in Singapore in 2019, the crowd was 55,000. 1,500 of them were Inter fans. The rest were Manchester United fans. So he's had to adapt to this global, you're great, you're bad. And the human mind doesn't just adjust to that straight away.
I wonder how much of a setback that lob against Lawrence was for him as well, because that was his first appearance at Old Trafford, be it pre-season friendly or not.
In the piece that will come out, you can see that in the data of where he's taking his touches. Also how that's changed throughout 2003 and post the new year as well. So what I did when I looked at the data was just saying, it looks like he's got better since the turn of the new year. Is he doing anything different? We've got an answer there. And I think right now, this isn't the Onana that we saw at Inter Milan. Now, that team had a deep back three. You also had Denzel Dumfries as your right wing back, and Dumfries is a particularly unique / bizarre right wing back who was always there as an attacking out ball. He's playing behind a back four at United. That's changed a lot. And it's not even a back four that is Ajax-like, that want to push really high up the field as well. This is a back four that sometimes pushes up, sometimes drops deep. You've got two or three. I mean, Harry Maguire, when he's facing everything, great. Harry Maguire, when he's got to turn around and retreat to his own goal, bit frantic. And Onana's had to figure out how that all works as well. And we talk about the reception, you know, Onana just getting used to things. Think about how long people were talking about Onana yelling at Harry Maguire. If he had done that Inter Milan, if he had done that Ajax, that is, oh, you yelled at your centre-back after making a save. Next question. That incident was played three or four times throughout the season, not just to denigrate Onana, but also denigrate Maguire as well. And I think that takes time. We've seen it in two or three press conferences where Erik ten Hag used to, when he was at Ajax, if he didn't want to ask a question, but I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about something else. Whereas at Manchester United, if we want to ask a question about Cristiano Ronaldo, we're going to keep asking you a question about Cristiano Ronaldo until you give us an answer. Ten Hag himself has mellowed a little bit in his approach in press conferences. And I think every United player has a moment where you realise your private life doesn't really exist in the same way it used to. And also, your worst moments now are going to be projected on all manner of screens forever, because there's at least 80,000 people week in, week out who are very interested in what you're doing with your life.
We've seen that this week. There was a tabloid story about Erik ten Hag having his hair cut.
Yeah.
Adam?
Yeah. What did you cut? But it's a bit of an intrusion, isn't it? If you can't just go to your local barbers and have a shave or whatever. And if you've not had that before, not that interest in your life, in an area which you could argue is your own business, and Andre Onana has not had that. He's had the politicking in Cameroon. He's had the government coming down on him.
That must be horrendous, by the way,
yeah.
A situation to be in.
Yeah.
Okay, well, if you want to know more about Andre Onana, his start at Manchester United and his emergence since, you know what to do. The article will be on The Athletic on Friday.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Okay, well, as promised, we're going to do a deep dive into the state of the Manchester United's women's team now on the podcast. And that's because Charlotte Harper, who joins us now, has written a very revealing article on The Athletic this week. Charlotte, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys. Nice to chat.
Yeah, really good to have you. We'll get into obviously all the different details, and there's some concerning aspects certainly for Manchester United fans to hear. But first, I think we need to maybe paint the picture of United's season. Obviously, last year was incredible. We talked about the women's side a lot on the podcast, making the Champions League for the first time, getting to the FA Cup final for the first time, breaking into the top three in the WSL, falling just short in the title race in the end. But this season's not been quite as good, has it?
It hasn't. They're 9 points off the top three, 12 points off the top of the table. So European qualification hopes are dwindling by the day. United lost 3-1 to Arsenal at the Emirates in a really flat performance. They looked lost, and then have recently drawn 1-1 against relegation fighters West Ham. Last year was an outlier, you know, their best season. So it was always going to be difficult to replicate that success and that consistency, but they fell way off the pace this season.
It's been really concerning, not just the manner of their defeats, so four defeats this season, but they've also had four draws. Draws against teams that Manchester United should be beating at this point in time. The goal scoring rate is still really, really good, but they are, you know, the West Ham, they drew 1-1, and it was just one of those games where last season they'd have blown West Ham out of the water 4-0. But this is what happens in the WSL. Teams are getting better. West Ham last season had Paul Konchesky, changed managers, they've got a bit more serious. Whereas United, there was always a fear they'd fall away when Anelisa Russo would go away and Onana would go away. And while it was a busy transfer window, there was always the sense that Mark Skinner took a while to figure out the team. By the time he did, Chelsea had just run away with it.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into the aspects of recruitment because it's featured heavily and prominently in your article about Russo, about Battier, about the players who came in the summer as well. But let's focus in on Mark Skinner if we can, Charlotte. You were in his press conference earlier on today. He starts bright and early, by the way. 8:30 press conference. Is that normal?
Every week.
Wow, okay. You actually questioned him about your article this morning as well, Charlotte, didn't you?
I did. I wanted to hear how the article had been received and whether players had spoken to him about concerns in the women's setup or whether they'd spoken to the players. And he said, we'll obviously have conversations around any topic that's brought to our attention. But he also said it's about balance. And I'm quoting here, that's really important because we're never going to report all the good things that happen at our club because nobody wants to hear good news. Now, he did clarify that he meant in general, in terms of life. You don't turn on news and see fantastically supportive, happy stories, is what he said. Which, in the women's football context, I would actually disagree. Women's football tends to cheerlead too much because you're wanting to grow the game and all these kind of cliches that come out. Interestingly, Tom Garry from The Telegraph picked up on that and said, okay, what good news is there? What aren't we reporting? And Mark Skinner referenced the new training ground at Carrington. Good news, but that was back at the start of the season. Ineos coming in. He referenced psychological support for players, medical support for players, a new player liaison officer that the media aren't covering. And he did say, you know, we will take ownership for the results. But it was interesting that Carl, who has covered last season the success of Manchester United and the good things that went on, for Mark Skinner to say, nobody wants to hear good news.
Manchester United are not quite best in class in the WSL. They are growing at a rapid rate. There's still a long way to go before you catch up with Chelsea. And it's all about how do you take that next step? How do you go from being the fourth best team in England to being the second best team? Because that gap is so pronounced. And the question now is, can Mark Skinner do it? I think Mark Skinner did a fantastic job taking over from Casey Stoney, where it looked as if United could have easily dropped after Casey Stoney left, and really pushed them to essentially a realistic, pragmatic ceiling, shall we say. However, how do you push forward? And is Mark Skinner the correct person to do that? I don't really know the answer. Mark Skinner seems to be very confident that he can find the answer. He's not quite sharing that with everyone else. That's, again, because he's a very good poker player.
Yeah, he did answer head on the question to him in the press conference this morning about the doubts there are amongst the Manchester United support about the way he's leading the team at the moment. Dan Sheldon reported on a bizarre incident in Malta in a friendly against PSV at the end of last year about a club representative speaking to supporters about chants of "We want Skinner out" and questioning them on that as well. You can go back and have a look at that on The Athletic. But Charlotte, I want to come back to something you said a moment ago. It's not the facilities that's the issue. What's the issue?
Yeah, this is the organisational structure among the women's team. So the club missed out on key signing because of delays at senior level. The club went back on a verbal deal, agreed to keep former striker Alessio Russo at the club. It's been a lack of clarity regarding budget and strategy. If you don't know your budget, how do you know how much you're going to spend on players? There's been a high level of staff turnover, team doctor, physio, strength and conditioning, coaches leaving. Assistant Martin Ho, who left in the summer, he has left a huge gap in the quality of coaching. Mark Skinner takes the brunt of everything, and the players as well, right? They're put in front of the media. But, and I said this on Full Time Europe, our women's football podcast, I don't think if you got a new manager in now and just waved a magic wand, all these problems would go away. Far from it. Okay, this goes above Mark Skinner. He doesn't have the keys for organisational strategy and basically who is signing off on these club decisions. You know, Polly Bancroft, head of women's football, she makes the day-to-day club decisions. She's also leaving at the end of the season to be CEO of Grimsby Town. So you have to ask questions, okay, why would you go from Manchester United to Grimsby Town? And there are people above Polly Bancroft and Mark Skinner who are responsible for the women's team. And by that, I mean John Murta and Andy O'Boyle.
In terms of the recruitment issues, Andy, and the strategy issues as well, obviously Charlotte's mentioned there Alessio Russo. I mean, fans of the women's side will be extremely disappointed to read that United reneged on a deal that they'd agreed verbally with her, considering the talent that she is, considering she was leaving on a free to go to one of the rivals who are above them now in the WSL as well. Onabatiye, another player who left in the summer on a free transfer, and another player that Manchester United, how hard did they try to keep her? How effective were they in trying to offer her the deal?
Ana's probably the best right back in women's football in the world, and she's a Catalan, so to go back to Barcelona was always very appealing to her. How long did it go on for, negotiations? 6 months. How many times did United improve the offer? 6 times. Were the frustrations right from the start on both sides? Absolutely. And the end result is that Manchester United lost one of the star players. If that happened for the men's team, there would be an outcry. But it did happen for the women's team. And
two of them?
Yeah.
Free, both of them.
The one I know well is the situation with Ana. There's mitigation as always. You might argue to Barcelona-born Ana that going back to Barcelona and playing for the best women's team in the world is a move up.
So this was always a really interesting signing. When Ana came to United, it was on a two-year deal. And initially it was treated a little bit like a rental. Barcelona's interest in Ana was always known, yet there was complications about a possible fee. There was always conversation, you can go to United and we'll come back in 2 years. And then Ana went to United and turned out to be, again, like you said, the best right back in the world, not just in terms of defensive quality, but attacking wise, she is sensational. She is the best player to progress the ball and help United just break down some of these low, deep defences. There were two or three times at Lee Sports Village where United were scoring late because give the ball to Ana and she'll figure it out, and then eventually someone else will stick the ball in the back of the net. And the start of this season, you could tell United really missed it. There were two or three times where we just don't know how to unlock this deep defence. We wish Ana was here. Skinner's eventually reconfigured this team and found a system that mostly works, but yeah. You can't replace a player that good, and letting them go on a free really stung.
By the way, how do you know the intricacies of Batier's negotiations with Manchester United?
In 2018, I took over running a football team who weren't very good, and I needed a centre forward. So I looked at the league the previous season and went for the top scorer, an Argentinian lad. Went to meet him and his dad, said, come and play for me. He's like, it's an hour away. Said, come and play for me. I want you to enjoy your football. Spoke to his dad, had a proper good chat with him, but I thought, I'm punching it. I'm not going to get him to come and play for me, because he played in the Argentinian third division. Lovely lad, loved him. And he rang me a few days later and said, I'm going to play for you. And I loved him so much that my wife went, you really like this lad, don't you? I said, I do, look at a picture of him. I had a picture of him in his prime.
From the Argentinian third division.
So he came to play for me. So the fact he drives an hour to play for me just means he's a hero in my eyes already. And I just said to the other lads, this lad lives for goals. Just get him the ball. I really liked him, and I'm a bit older than him, and we get a top connection. And then during COVID, he came to me and said, I want to be an agent. So I sat with him for a couple of hours, and I put him in touch with a couple of agents, and I helped him, and I tried to show him, you know, what to do and what not to do. And he was representing the captain of Barcelona and Spain, Vicky. And because he's a good guy, and because he's a good agent and speaks all the languages, because he knows football, he has done very well as an agent. And he's my mate, and he represents Ana. So in answer to your question, but I know him as a goal scorer. I absolutely buzzed off him, mate. And we did him in the team. The losses started turning into wins.
Well, there's a journey, Charlotte, into Andy Mitten. I'm sure you're aware already that these asides happen. I just go with it and don't try to fight it. Let's add a bit more then as well into the situation with United keeping hold of these players, because Mary Earps is going to be the next one for United. I mean, she's pretty much an icon of football now. She's even having a waxwork made of her. She's going to be the first women's player in the country to have that honour, if that's the right word, I guess. But she's out of contract at the end of the season, right?
She is, and it's a case of deja vu for United. These contracts have gone on for over 18 months. Discussions started after the Euros. Mary Earps would have been in the best negotiating position possible. She changed agents just at the end of last year. News coming out from PSG that they were heavily interested in Mary Earps, but for United, nothing has moved on. Nothing has changed. And Mary Earps's value is in England. You know, her stock and her value is in England because of the Lionesses and the World Cup success. If I were Manchester United, I would be wanting to keep hold of her because she can sell out Old Trafford. Have you ever heard in the men's or women's games, not only your team, but the opposition chanting your first name?
A ridiculous reception that she got in the Manchester Derby, where one of City's goals, if you're being mean about it, could be put on Mary making an error passing out from the back. And yet during a break in play, I heard both sets of fans chanting Mary's name. She's the most beloved player in the WSL at this point in time. I do know Arsenal put in a bid that would have made her the record signing for a goalkeeper in the summer. Is there any chance they could go for her again?
Yeah, Arsenal wanted to do that a bit on the quiet and be a bit discreet about that. But my understanding is that interest has cooled. They could go back in for her for the summer, especially if she's a free agent. There are, how shall I put this diplomatically, they may want real competition for their number one, Manuela Zinsberger, to push each other to next levels. You've also seen how Arsenal have been pretty savvy in terms of having or really tapping into that Lioness branding with Leah Williamson, Beth Mead, then getting Alessia Russo in. If you get Mary Earps as well, that's four of probably the biggest England players. So unknown about Arsenal's movements for a goalkeeper. But Mary, she wants to be playing in the Champions League. She wants to be winning the WSL. She's 31 today, so yes, she has many years ahead of her, especially as a goalkeeper, but, you know, she's not a young, upcoming goalkeeper. She wants to be seeing out the best years of her career.
Can I talk to you about Ineos, Charlotte, as well? You mentioned in the article about the audit that they'll perform across the club, and obviously that includes the women's side. But what did you make of some of the comments that Sir Jim Ratcliffe made in his briefing to media when the deal was completed for his investment in Manchester United? Because he touched upon the women's side a little bit, but maybe not in the way that you'd want.
So my understanding is that Ineos's mantra is best in class across men's, women's academy. If the shirt has a Manchester United badge on it, they want to be winning trophies. And so Jim Ratcliffe said they want to topple Liverpool and Manchester City off their perch in the men's game. And my understanding is that it will probably be a similar ambition for the women's team, that they want to be the number one in around 3 or 4 years, long-term project. Sir Jim Ratcliffe, when he was asked directly about a women's team stadium, plans are to reduce Old Trafford's capacity. So you have a world-class facility next door, and that Old Trafford Stadium will be used as a community asset or for a concert or whatever. I'm quoting Sir Jim Ratcliffe here. And the plan is to have the ladies' teams, quotes again, or an academy team, or academy teams play there as well. Now, that is a huge improvement from Lee Sports Village, which is 25 kilometres outside the city centre. Brilliant. But the fact that he referred to the ladies' team as well was slightly jarring. It's Manchester United women's team.
It's old-fashioned, isn't it, to call them the ladies' team? It's disrespectful in a way.
Yeah, I mean, just know it. Like, that's their name.
Yeah.
Just call them by their name, the Manchester United women's team. And also, somebody was saying this to me about Hervé Renard, the France women's team manager, who was reportedly going over to coach Ivory Coast at AFCON. And it's like, why do the women's teams always have to share? Like, that's, it's not sounding moany. It's just like, put them front and center. So if you have a women's stadium, your design focus is going to be for fans of women's football. Populous, the architectural company, are doing really good things in terms of what do women's fans want, whether that's families, whether that's kids, whether that's young men, old men, all different kind of overlapping demographics. So if you have a stadium specifically designed for a women's team, you're probably going to maximise that potential more. So my argument is, why don't you just build a women's stadium for the women's team?
I think they should. I think that's a good idea. And Lee is not only way out of Manchester, it doesn't have any decent public transport. You've seen what Manchester City have done. My daughter played her first competitive game last weekend, and she trains twice a week in a stadium named after Aitana Bonmati, and her name is above the stand, and her hero is right in front of her eyes, and she's the best player in the world. Now, if Ineos are saying best in class and I'm sat there watching my little un, you're telling me there's a chance I might be able to work some magic here.
You mean Simon Bonmati or your daughter?
Is she the best in the world, Charlotte?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely, hands down.
Is the Barcelona model one worth following, Charlotte? I know Manchester City's men's team copied it, but I take my daughters to watch Barca women twice a season when they were playing in camp now. They were getting crowds of above 90,000, and they were not on freebie tickets. What Barca have done is gradually increased the ticket price. The experience is fantastic. It's actually much better than the men's team. The atmosphere is less cynical. My daughters are there, flag waving, really bang into it. And they're getting 20 to 30 euros per ticket. Now, if you're getting that from 90,000 people, and that only might be two or three times per season, and it isn't this season because they're not playing in the home, that is serious revenue. And with that, what you can do is go to people like Manchester United and steal, but they did it completely in the gym, and take the best player.
Yeah, Arsenal are doing the same. I mean, there's some incredible data from Susie Rack this week, Charlotte, wasn't there, about Arsenal's accounts. They've had a 400% increase in match day revenue, and that's not even including this season when they've sold out the Emirates, including the match against Manchester United. It's an increase from a revenue of 532,000 a season to 2.68 million. I mean, this makes a world of difference, doesn't it, Charlotte?
Yeah, absolutely. And Arsenal have done it very well in terms of commercial and marketing. We've seen that rapid rise and not just on one-offs, you know, back-to-back sell-out stadiums against Manchester United and Tottenham Hotspur. I think Manchester United have a huge amount of learning to do. And as applicable with the men's game, Ineos are taking a look and learn approach. It's not going to happen overnight. And you also have to be realistic that women's football is not the top priority at Manchester United. The top priority is the men's team and to stabilise that. Actually, internally at Manchester United, they think the women's team is doing okay. It's on track, given that they're a top four side. They made the FA Cup final last year. So a long, gradual process. They're not going to splurge money in the summer transfer window like with the men's team. But my growing frustration is there is so much potential with this Manchester United women's team. Invest now and you will bear fruits in the years to come.
Do you think this invest now call gets stronger when you consider what's going on at Chelsea next season as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Chelsea are probably going to be their most vulnerable with so much change and Emma Hayes leaving to the US women's national team. Gareth Taylor, Manchester City manager, has just signed a new 3-year contract. You know, it's really right there for the taking. Arsenal have been disappointing this year, and yet they renewed Jonas Edervall's contract in October. Manchester United are there and thereabouts. Just imagine if you had a proper budget and a strategy and recruitment and scouts. It sounds basic, but these are the things that they don't have.
Yeah, and that's what makes your article a fascinating read as well. Charlotte, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, I can thoroughly recommend that article. Go and have a look at it on The Athletic.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Right, back to the men's team then. A crucial few weeks ahead for the side and also Erik ten Hag, as we've talked about on the podcast previously. It all starts with Everton across the famous Bridgewater Canal from here at Hotel Football. the world's oldest canal, as we've already established on this podcast. But whichever way you look at it, these next few weeks are crucial, Andy, aren't they? Like I've just said.
Must win, must win, must win. I know I said it before the Fulham game, but I think if United do not beat Everton, then you're going to see dissent building against Erik ten Hag. Everton, interestingly, was the game where I felt Ole Gunnar lost his support. Everton at Old Trafford.
Well, Andy, you mentioned Solskjaer there, actually. He's been on another podcast this week, several months after you first spoke to him, obviously. But there's been quite a lot about the half-time at Watford, his final match. In the podcast, he talked about the idea of asking the players who wanted to play, put your hand up if you want to play. And obviously, the detectives amongst the fan base have gone and looked at half-time at Watford and seen that Marcus Rashford and Scott McTominay were taken off. Damaging that, isn't it?
Well, it's not true either. I will tell you categorically that not one player put their hand up at half time because he didn't want to play. Every one of them wanted to play that second half. But Ole Gunnar substituted Scott and Marcus anyway. It was his decision. It was a management decision. That is the fact. End of. So what you're seeing being twirled, and I'm seeing stuff against Scott McTominay, Ole absolutely loves Scott McTominay. He's the one player who he absolutely buzzes off. So, well, I've told you what's happened.
Well, in India, he was going on about Scott McTominay every opportunity, wasn't he?
I was just saying, all right, just calm down, you know.
It's not that good.
I get it that you like him, but, you know, you've not shut up about him.
Let's get back to this weekend.
I sense wobbles in the moods of the fans, and United really do need to beat Everton and to play well too. And if we see Everton's midfield cutting through Manchester United's, and that's going to make people extremely nervous. Do you think that's fair, Carl?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a repeat occurrence week in, week out because of this transition-based style of play. Everton at Goodison did have two or three ways through. Decore in particular was quite dangerous, but thankfully we had Maynou settling the ship. Remember, he cleared the ball off the line there.
One of United's best displays of the season away at Goodison in some ways.
Probably the best 90 minutes, most cohesive 90 minutes. But even then, still, you had to get a player clear the ball off the line and you had two or three, two of the throws. So and it should be tough. It shouldn't be tough. No. We're still waiting.
Well, Everton are winless in 10 Premier League matches. It's the joint longest run they've ever had in the Premier League. It's the longest since, what, 94, 95? We won't talk about what happened at the end of that season. But only Port Vale and Rotherham are on a longer winless run in English football's top four tiers.
I'll put it to you this way. I'll be a lot more confident this tomorrow afternoon if Ten Hag tells me Anthony Martial's fit.
Because of his displays against Everton rather than anything else.
There you go.
The game at Goodison, I know, well, there was two big headlines. It was a Garnacho goal, but Cobby was incredible, wasn't he? Man of the match. Just came in and looked like he played 300 Premier League games. So I sense it would sound a little bit nervous because I do. Because it's this fragile Manchester United. But
you're not standing still talking about it either.
Got to beat Everton. Got to beat Everton at Old Trafford. If you're not picking up 3 points in that, then this idea of somehow making the Champions League seems even more improbable.
I don't even think it's for Champions League. In my mind, because it's because I'm a Debbie Downer, in my mind the Champions League is gone. It's a must win because
I don't think it is gone completely. Top four maybe, but you know the opportunity of getting in through the back door in the top five is there.
Yeah, maybe-ish. I'm clearing my Thursdays for the end of the year because I think I'm going to be listening to the Europa League theme song. I think it's must win because it's must win for Ten Hag because Ten Hag needs to get buy-in. He needs to get further buy-in. He needs to start putting together performances where fans, commenters, everyone else goes, yeah. If everyone's fit, I can see what you're trying to do. I can see glimpses, but
yeah.
What did you make of the rumours that have begun this week about Gareth Southgate, about Thomas Frank, about Roberto De Zerbi all being linked with the job at Old Trafford?
Inevitable, given I don't think Erik ten Hag's future at Old Trafford is secured. I think I've said it several times on this pod, it is still in play. And there will be, it's an easy story in some way as well, because nobody's going to deny it or disprove it. And also I think it's the Ineos way of keeping people on their toes. They're not going to play things down either. So if Manchester United are where they are in the league, you are going to see stories like this. We saw it at the end of Van Gaal, where it was Mourinho or whoever else.
What about it being those managers in particular?
My opinion on those managers, I think they're all good managers. Do I go, wow, this has got to happen? No, I don't.
They're three very different managers.
Yeah, and this is that too. Yeah?
This is why I raised my arm going, really? Southgate is known for being more of a man manager and leaving a lot of the tactical stuff to Steve Holland.
Culture builder.
Thomas Frank sort of makes sense from a tactical view. A lot of long passes, a lot of focus on set pieces. I could see him being delighted to have someone like Rasmus Højlund. De Zerbi does not have... United don't have the centre-backs to do what De Zerbi wants to do, football-wise. So I saw all the chatter yesterday and all the arguments on social media and just went, let's just think about this for 5 minutes. Gareth Southgate to Manchester United feels like the new Wesley Schneider to Manchester United, to me.
Why?
Because it just happened for... I've had year after year, Gareth Southgate's been linked to be the Manchester United manager. And it just doesn't quite make sense. You can put Southgate next to Wesley Schneider and Gaetan, and who else has been linked to United for years?
Yeah, quite a few. I mean, Laurie is not here today, obviously, but he's talked about in the past the link between Ineos and the Football Association. Dan Ashworth obviously has got a history of working at the Football Association as well. So there will be a link there with Southgate, I guess, just based on that.
And the appointments which we are expecting, they're all perceived to be best in class. Dan Ashworth is very, very highly rated. Whoever comes in, had they come up until now, you're still working under the structure which has been failing with the Glazers in charge. It's almost as important, if not more important, that whatever happens now is the new Manchester United, where things had to change and they are changing. And I don't think any manager in the world could have gone up against Manchester City by himself and won the league. And we've seen Jose Mourinho, Louis van Gaal, top managers come, and within 2 years, they're off. Talking about Laurie, right, the other day, I can't escape him. As I'm driving to Peterborough, I go past a town near workshop called Whitwell. And I thought, I cannot escape this lad, can I? Anyway, carry on.
Was it a nice place?
Oh, I went past it. I didn't stop. I didn't have time. I had a kickoff to make.
Okay. Really, not like you to drive past places, is it? Normally gets out of the car and has a look. Anyway, we're going to leave.
There's a piece from Mark Critchley on The Athletic right now that is about Erik ten Hag's future and how conversation of him being removed before the end of the season is a little bit wider than Mark. Critchley's done loads of excellent reporting on Ineos. And one thing he keeps saying is everything we've seen from this Ineos takeover, they're doing things slowly top down. So to swap managers right now for someone like De Zerbi before they've sorted out your sporting director doesn't quite make sense. So I would recommend anything Critchley writes on Ineos, give it a read.
Okay, great. We'll leave it there then on Talk of the Devils. Thank you for being with us as always. Andy and Carl, thank you for being here at Hotel Football. And we'll see you on the next one, whatever happens across the Bridgewater Canal. Take care. Bye-bye.
Athletic.